Hello and welcome to episode number 403 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is April 1st, 2024. I'm Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/403. Slappy, how was your Easter?
It was nice. It was nice. Hit both sides of the family. Got the mass in the morning.
Nice.
It was good. How about you?
That was all right. Spend it with family in the evening. So
nice.
It's good.
Any wild cooking or goats or
anything
out of the ordinary?
No, I've been just working a lot. Yeah. So yesterday was a rare day off. So I didn't really do any cooking. I didn't host.
Good.
But I did make a Columba, Italian dove Easter cake.
Nice.
So I bought a dove cake pan in preparation for it. Turned out good. It's the first time I ever made it.
Cool. Back on St. Joseph Day, I don't know if this is like Italian or an American Italian thing, but those little St. Joseph cakes, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I found some. I tried to find them last year and couldn't. And there's like a Italian bakery and not too far from here that had them. I don't know if you've ever had these things, but they're fantastic.
No, I'm looking at
pastries with the if you look up St. Joseph cake.
Okay. It's funny.
They have another name, some Italian name that I don't.
Zeppoli.
Yeah. Zeppoli. I don't know.
Yeah, Zeppoli.
But they're fantastic.
Highly
recommended.
It's funny because I brought it over and my mom was texting me today. So like, I looked it up. I never even heard of it.
Mm.
Different, like it's, Italy is very regional.
Yeah, everything is.
As far as,
And then you just say, it's a German tradition. And you're like, oh, well, you know, maybe in Bavaria.
Like, right. But my paternal grandmother was 100% Italian, and she like never really heard of lasagna. It just
wasn't a thing they did.
No, but she made giambat. I don't know if my maternal grandmother make giambat, but like then my maternal grandmother makes stuff like pizza rustica, which is utterly fantastic. It's like crack. It's like a meat and cheese pie. Really, really good. And it's I'm kind of an Italian mutt. Three of my grandparents are Italian, and so I've got like Sicilian in me, some Northern Italy, and I think like Genoa. I forget.
Is McFlugel, is that from the north of Italy, or where is that?
No, that's from Poland.
Okay.
For the other and speaking of which, did you celebrate the holiday today?
No.
No? Well, happy Dingus Day.
No.
It is the it's the day after Easter Monday.
And is that a thing, Dingus Day? I'm not familiar.
Yes, it is.
Mm.
So I want to read from the Wikipedia page on Dingus Day for the section for Poland. This is a real thing, by the way. The festival is traditionally celebrated by boys throwing water over girls they like. Sometimes they also strike them with pussy willows. Deborah Anders Silverman writes that, quote, the Easter whipping custom still exists in Central Europe. Laszlo Lukacs cites variants in Poland, Hungary, and Germany. Whipping and other Dingus Day customs are seldom observed in the older Polish communities of the United States, some of which date from the 1880s. Water splashing, however, is still done as a joke in southern Ontario, where a more recent group of Polish immigrants has settled. Boys would sneak into girls' homes at daybreak on Easter Monday and throw containers of water over them while they were still in bed. After all the water had been thrown, the screaming girls would often be dragged to a nearby river or pond for another drenching. Sometimes a girl would be carried out, still in her bed, before both bed and girl were thrown into the water together. Particularly attractive girls could expect to be soaked repeatedly during the day. The use of water is said to evoke the spring rains needed to ensure a successful harvest later in the year. In some regions, girls could save themselves from a soaking by giving boys ransoms of painted eggs, regarded as magical charms that would bring good harvests, successful relationships, and healthy childbirths. In the past, the girls were supposed to wait until the following day to get their revenge by soaking the boys, but in practice, both sexes throw water over each other on the same day. The nowadays customs turns usually into a regular water fight. Pussy willows appear to have been adopted as an alternative to the palm leaves used elsewhere in Easter celebrations, which were not obtainable in Poland. They were blessed by priests on Palm Sundays, following which parishioners whipped each other with the pussy willow branches, saying, all right, this is going to test my ability to read Polish. Nija bij, wierzba bij, tierzirn.
I'd say that Vierki, was flawless.
Wierki zien.
No, I'm still going.
Ja, jek, knock, wilknock. Which is, it's not me who strikes, the willow strikes, in a week holy day in 6 nights Easter. The pussy willows were then treated as sacred charms that could prevent lightning strikes, protect animals, and encourage honey production. They were believed to bring health and good fortune to the people as well, and it was traditional for 3 pussy willow buds to be swallowed on Palm Sunday to promote good health. As with the water throwing, boys would whip girls with pussy willows on Easter Monday, and girls would do the same to boys on the following Tuesday. The celebration would traditionally be accompanied by declarations in verse, in which a young man would climb on the roof of a building in the village, beat a tin pan, and announce which girls were to be doused along with how many wagon loads of sand, how much water, and how much soap would be used on each girl. The girls would also respond in verse, announcing that there was someone who would save her. For instance, for the tavern roof would come the announcement that Joska, because she dressed badly, kept her house untidy, and quarreled with everyone, will have a dingus of 100 barrels of water, 100 cartloads of sand, and 100 lashes. Then from a window would come the reply that Joska is not frightened because Zeshiek stands beside her with a bottle of whiskey to buy off all assailants and ransom her off from the penalty. A dingus procession would also be held either on Easter Monday or Tuesday. A parade of boys would take part in a march known as Shajeni Po Dingusi, going on the dingus, or Jekojikiem with the cockerel. A reference to the use of a live bird, usually taken without permission and stuffed with grain soaked with vodka to make him crow loudly. A decorated and carved wooden rooster was sometimes used as an alternative. The rooster was a symbol of fertility, carried on a small two-wheeled wagon, which had been painted red and decorated with ribbons and flowers, to which was often also added small puppets representing a wedding party. This would be pushed from door to door by the boys, who would crow like roosters and sing dingus songs conveying good wishes and requests for gifts and food. Their objective was to encourage the inhabitants to give them food from their Easter tables, such as Easter eggs, ham, and sausages. A typical dingus song went, "Your duck has told me that you've baked a cake. Your hen has told me she's laid you a basket and a half of eggs. Your sow has told me that you've killed her son. If not her son, then her little daughter. Give me something if only a bit of her fat, who will not be generous today. Let him not count on heaven." In some regional variants of Po Dingusi, the boys would march to the village, and one of their number dressed as a bear with a bell on his head, either wearing a red bear skin or a stand-in made of pea vines. The group would go from door to door collecting gifts for the bear before drowning the bear in a nearby stream or pond. This was probably an adaptation of a traditional ceremony to drown a small figure of Marzena, the spirit of winter. The bears were often invited in as they were believed to ensure that they would be a good harvest, reflecting a very ancient belief in the power of the bear to prevent evil, encourage crop growth, and cure diseases. In the historical regions of Mazovia and Lesser Poland, boys wearing bearskins would also chase girls. A similar custom is seen in Sivki Easter tradition. Oh, it's almost done. Girls had their own version of Po Dingasi, in which they would go from door to door carrying a freshly cut green branch or gage, seeking food and singing songs welcoming the new year that followed Easter. Our green little tree, beautifully decked, goes everywhere, for it is proper that it should. We go with it to the manor house, wishing good fortune, good health, for this new year which God has given us. Families would visit each other on the same day to deliver presents of Easter eggs or rolls, receiving in return gifts of food from the Easter table. In other words, Polish people know how to party and have a good time. I know, like, weddings tend to last like a day, or like a week. So being a man of Poland, I am quite cultured, and I challenge any stupid Metagon or Waspy or other sort of like culture to have any sort of culture that comes close to that of the Polish or the Italian. You still there, Slappy?
Or
you
just I fell asleep. Awe? I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
back. Just in awe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. What does your culture consist of? Forgetting to grow potatoes 1 year?
No, not reading long, boring things to people listening.
I thought it was great, and we've enriched.
It was great for the first, like, paragraph when you were talking about, like, water throwing. Well, that was funny. All right, cool. I was going to ask you who was the lucky girl who you threw the water on this year. But then it just drug. I don't even know what you said for the last three quarters of that.
Well, you know, it's like going to a fine art museum and, you know, you just not being able to comprehend. Yeah. Or going to a fine restaurant and just be like, I want chicken nuggets. You know, it's not for everybody.
It. Yeah, right. I just don't get it.
So happy Dingus Day.
Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting for sure. I hope you douse somebody in water. And I hope it went well for you.
Mm-hmm. No, I just threw her bed and all into the local body of water.
That's good.
Yeah, one of the Kennedys.
So, you know, I was
said to have celebrated Dingus Day a little bit too rough.
Yeah, so I guess he did, huh? But funny, I don't know why you said that, if that's just because that's kind of what happened. But as I was going to bring this up, because South Bend, Indiana, apparently has a big Dingus Day celebration, which I found on Wikipedia. And Robert F. Kennedy's 1968 appearance was marked by his downtown rally attended by a crowd of over 6,000, his participation in the Dingus Day parade and leading of crowds. Da, 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 da. And then it says, this may have led to his nomination if he didn't die. But it's a big deal in South Bend, Indiana, evidently. So there's that.
Speaking of other places with random Slav populations, West Texas has a lot of
El Paso?
I think it's West Texas.
Yeah, El Paso's in West Texas.
No, I'm the city.
The town is called West Texas. Oh, West Comet, Texas.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the great. Well,
go down there and get yourself some kolachkis. I love Texas.
No, it's funny. So I have a friend who actually Mrs. Jones and I have friends who were born about our age, but born in Poland, live most of their life in Poland. And was talking to them, we were over their house a couple of weeks ago and just kind of talking. They said there was a ton of Polish immigrants who went to Texas. Mm-hmm. And they were told that it was like this thing. She was explaining it to us. They were telling them it's just like Germany, like all these forests, and it's what you're used to, because, you know, Poland and Germany, that section of Poland, like right there. And they're like, but it's great because no one will bother you.
Or just cut out.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still here. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, you said it's just like German. Texas is just like Germany.
Yeah, she said that's what they were selling everyone on, is it's all these like lush fields and wooded area, and they went there and it wasn't that at all.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But they stayed and like kind of made their way and did what they did. But so there is a big Polish population in Texas.
Yeah. There's a pretty sizable Polish population around where we are. I think
there is. The church I go to was originally a Polish parish, and there's several of them.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And we have the shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa.
Yeah, not far.
Not far from us, which is pretty cool.
It's very cool. Very cool.
And their cafeteria is absolutely fantastic.
It is. I went to you didn't go to the Polish festival last year.
No, I didn't get a chance to. I definitely.
That was fun. You should go this year.
Yeah. We can have some.
You want that's Polish.
Żywiec?
Probably.
I'm so proud that I know how to pronounce that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just eat it.
It's why you drink it, because it's a beer.
Well, I did drink some Polish beer. I don't know what kind it was.
Yeah. There's some good Polish beers.
Sure.
Żywiec, Leech, Tyski. There's another one. I can't remember its name. There's one where it's like a woman dancing. That's the label. It's pretty good. But yeah, I feel like the Slav, especially the Polish cultures, are not as appreciated as they should be. But it's some pretty cool stuff. And I also like cooking the Polish food. It's fairly simple, you know, not very spiced, but just like.
I would take Polish food any day of the week.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's just something about, like, very homey, hearty. I've got I forget the name of the website, but I think they're out of New York, and they sell a lot of, like, imported Polish, like, handmade goods, and I have a little, like, I don't even know what it, like, I don't, but, like, a wall ornament. That it's written in Polish, but it's it translates to guest in the house is God in the house. That's like it's like the one decoration I have in my house. So I think it's pretty neat. I like all that old stuff. This is kind of funny because it's all like the stuff on Twitter you see from people who are like, oh, we've got to preserve the culture, and it's like, yeah, sure, like preserve your culture, but Just do it yourself.
Well, that's how you preserve it.
Yeah. As opposed to like, for me, I mean, there's certain things about like we talked about before about like Americana and stuff that I like.
Sure.
I like certain things about, you know, America and everything, and but also just like the ethnic cultures. It's just kind of up to you to preserve, and I don't really. I mean, a lot of the culture that I care about and subscribe to and want to preserve is more stuff that comes from Italy and Poland, and less about, you know, like whatever American thing there is. But anyway, we jumped on the call and I just said, let's go.
Yeah.
And so in honor of Dingus Day. It's important that you don't be the other kind of dingus. And I've been seeing this a lot on Bitcoin Twitter and stuff, especially there was a recent Stefan Levera podcast with Vijay Boyapati talking about Bitcoin scaling. And I think people get it wrong because there was a lot of kind of uproar over what Vijay was saying about scaling. And I've just been kind of like seeing it going on a lot recently where people are taking, I don't know. I think they have bad takes and don't understand it. I think we've talked about this before and you still have no idea what I'm about to say. But Vijay Boyapati was making the case that, hey, you know, we can't expect everyone, and everyone being like most people are not going to control their own UTXOs as Bitcoin monetizes. And there's a lot of backlash for it. There's a lot of people like freaking out over it. But I think we need to come to terms with a realistic scenario for how Bitcoin's going to scale, how it's going to become global money. And Slappy, it was probably over a year ago now, but we had frequent guest Vake on to talk about Fedimins and that kind of thing. And it's just another one of those things where it's stuff that we've like talked about a lot like forever ago, and all of a sudden people start talking about similar things and losing their minds over it, where we're just kind of like, you never really thought about this?
No.
So like, what do you think? I don't know. I'm sure you didn't listen to this episode I'm referring to.
No, I didn't. I haven't listened to anything.
But what do you think about Bitcoin scaling? Do you think we're going to have like everyone paying for the coffees with on-chain UTXOs?
Yeah, definitely.
On-chain transactions?
I think it's going to take definitely, for sure. All these small little tiny transactions on-chain. I mean, yeah, we've been talking about it for a long time. I don't know what the solution is. But it's going to be layers on top. I mean, that is always how money works. It's just going to happen that way. We were saying maybe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, like we're still so early and things are being done, like Lightning Network and those Fedimins, and you know, there's all kinds of things that people are working on, and I don't know which one's going to really be the one. I don't know. Yeah. But we're not going to be making these on chain. I mean, that's just absurd.
What's funny to me is that we both read the Bitcoin Standard.
Mm-hmm.
We both read it a while ago. And like basically everyone who's really into Bitcoin has read that book.
Pretty much, I would say. Or at least tells people they read it.
Maybe that's the important distinction, because based on the way a lot of people are reacting, it's just kind of like, did you read that book?
Do you know what you're talking about at all?
And not that you necessarily have to totally agree with the thesis of the book, but like this idea that people are freaking out that Vijay and other people are saying that, you know what, we're going to, you know, Bitcoin adoption as money is not going to be people controlling their own UTXOs. It's going to be more like you're going to have, you know, a lot of banks, call them banks, like, you know, operating Lightning nodes or Fedimins or something, or some sort of, you know, layer on top of on-chain Bitcoin. And that's where, excuse me, the average day-to-day person is going to, how they're going to be interacting with Bitcoin. And that was the thesis of the Bitcoin Standard.
Yeah.
that it's going to make being a central bank, if, you know, for lack of a better term, it's going to lower the barriers of entry to that and make it so that you don't need to be, you know, have some sort of favors with the state or something to be able to do that. It's just, you know, your ability to operate a good business basically is what's going to allow you to do that. If you have enough capital to put up some money, then really all you need other than that is just a standard internet connection and, you know, not that much hardware, And, you know, you're on par with everybody else. So, you know, if you've read the Bitcoin Standard and say that you agree with the thesis there and, you know, grok the ideas behind it, then, you know, it's kind of funny to me that people are freaking out over what Vijay is saying.
Yeah.
But it just kind of goes to it's the criticism I lay upon a lot of Bitcoiners all the time, is that it's just, without really understanding what's going on, they just kind of repeat talking points and repeat it very aggressively. And then when the rubber hits the road and you actually have to apply these ideas, they kind of just act like the robot with water dumped on them.
Yeah. In fairness to Bitcoiners, I think that's most things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Not arguing against what you're saying, agreeing, but just saying, I think that's generally the case.
No, I mean, I'm picking on Bitcoiners because that's kind of
our... It's worth picking on them because Bitcoin Standard's not like some unknown publication.
Right. And everyone claims to have read it and under it's
been
you know
on board and this is great and you should read this. This is must read. Yeah, and then you don't know what's in it.
It's kind of like the people that call themselves Hoppians that say they're monarchists.
When they say, yeah, I've read Hoppe because there's an asterisk there because they read an excerpt of one paragraph of a book.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's funny. I don't know where I was going, but
the other funny thing is too with Hoppe, and you've read more Hoppe than I have.
Probably not much more.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. But anyway, I remember it was a couple of years ago. People kept talking about being Hoppe and like saying the most absurd things of like really focusing on getting. It wasn't physical removal. What was it? Physical removal that they all said, or helicopter rides, or
yeah, physical.
I don't know what it was. I remember thinking like, all right, there's a lot of libertarians I like and read, and they really like Hoppe, and this doesn't sound very libertarian. So there's got to be more to it, you know? You read a little bit, and you're like, oh, there is more to it.
Yeah, I tend to like Hoppe. I don't necessarily. I mean, I'm not that well read in Hoppe, and there's some stuff that I don't really agree with, but it's not like things that would make me feel like Hoppe's totally discredited or anything. It's more just the people that call themselves Hoppians, for the most part, are the ones that are annoying and don't even really seem to have understood Hoppe very well.
Yeah.
And so it's funny when it's just like you said earlier, it's all groups for everything, that you have people that think they know what they're talking about, but they just, even if they read the thing that they're saying they read, they have no way of actually like thinking through it very well. And they just apply things in a really goofy and incorrect fashion that makes for frustrating conversations and everything. But the thing about people are kind of get going back to Bitcoin, people get all worried and flustered, about the idea of not everyone, you know, controlling their own keys and transacting on chain, or even having their own Lightning nodes and everything. But what Bitcoin gives us, even if we do still have, you know, quote unquote central banks, it lowers the barrier to entry to be a bank. And by doing that, it makes it so that all you need is capital and like market reputation in order to compete. You don't need special favors and everything. You don't need to be, you know, close to the money printers and stuff. So I think that's a really important thing to understand. Is that there will be a lot of competition among these banks.
Mm-hmm.
Among these services. So if you mess up or start behaving poorly and badly, I mean, there's going to be, you know, pretty quick consequences for it. assuming that most of this stuff, let's say there's, I think VJ said something like, yeah, there's going to be like, you know, 10 million banks that are all going to be a Lightning network. Lightning right now, it's pretty much instantaneous. Super fast transactions and everything. And so settlement among the Lightning network happens basically instantly. And so there is, you know, if two banks have to settle the score, if you will, it happens super fast. And so if you're going to try to, you know, scam people and cheat them with that, when they can just say, I'm calling your bluff and I'm settling here, even without going on chain and just doing the Lightning transaction, you know, there's not much time to be able to run your scam. So, and even still, even people might want to say something like, oh, well, if we have just the only people that are controlling UTXOs are people that are, you know, these banks that are, you know, running these Lightning nodes, then isn't that centralization? But if you think about it, and let me run this by you, Slappy, do you think that, like, the number of people that own UTXOs or number of entities that own UTXOs, like, overall that number is going to change all that much?
Well, how can you own a number?
Well, no, I mean, like, the people that control private keys. Yeah. People that control private keys. Do you really think that that's going to change all that much?
I don't know.
So the point I'm trying to make here is that, like, the problem, you know, we can envision a situation where we have a bunch of people operating as banks, and they're mostly people that are controlling the UTXOs, and, you know, they want a fractional reserve and everything. You know, to coordinate that attack would be kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was they tried to hard fork Bitcoin with the SegWit 2x scam and the Bitcoin Cash stuff. And it was kind of a smaller, fairly small cohort of people that were resisting it, at least as far as, you know, the economics went. And they beat it. I don't really see a smaller number of entities owning UTXOs than what happened back then. And it utterly failed doing that. Mm-hmm. And so I think as time moves on, I don't think it's going to get worse. I don't think you're going to have necessarily greater concentration of Bitcoin wealth. And so for someone to say, hey, you know, I want to start fractionally reserving Bitcoin, I want to have more Bitcoin, and so I think we should just inflate the supply. Yeah, there's, you have 1 million, 10 million Bitcoin banks out there. That's going to be difficult to coordinate.
Yep.
You're going to have to get all of them, or at least enough that would make people that resist, want to resist, go along with it. I don't think it's all that likely. It's, you know, you have all the game theory at play, and, you know, you have a couple of these banks say, hey, we want to increase the supply of Bitcoin. It's going to be great for us and everything. And so they try to coordinate this hard fork, and everybody else just kind of says, nah, that doesn't really seem to benefit us. Like, you know, I think it's going to benefit, you're just not going to participate. So just because, I guess what I'm trying to say is, just because we have people that aren't individuals controlling, you know, all their own Bitcoin themselves, I don't think we're necessarily going to see a thing where you're going to see collusion just because the entities are businesses Each of these businesses, we're going to be, it's going to be spread throughout the world, each having their own, you know, desires and interests and everything else. I mean, you see something like Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy accumulating Bitcoin. Not everyone is necessarily going to be a Bitcoin bank. There's a lot of people, I think a lot of people right now who have, you know, at least a Bitcoin about that are going to be major players during when Bitcoin monetizes. And so not everyone's going to want to operate as a bank or whatever. And so you have to deal with those people. You have to deal with a lot of the economic value in the Bitcoin market not being banking entities, if you will. Or at least being like very private banking entities in the sense that, you know, they're not open to the public to participate in it. And so they have kind of a different interest in how the network is operating and everything. And so, you know, for someone like you and me, you know, we've accumulated some Bitcoin. And if, let's say Bitcoin monetizes and it's, you know, $100 million per Bitcoin. And you've got a bunch of banks getting together and say, hey, we should inflate supply. It'll be better for us. And there's just those of us that will just be like, no, that would obviously hurt us. We're not doing that. And so they risk they're hard forking away from the rest of the network. So I think the game theory, regardless of who is controlling the UTXOs, as long as it's fairly distributed, I think it's going to play out in a good way.
I think time will tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you're doing this either, but I'm not like making predictions of this is how it's going to work, but something's going to work.
It is what it is. And, you know, we can't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
And also, it's just not practical. I don't even, and I think that's like a kind of an unfair thing to say because I don't think it's, you know, it's just not practical at all to think that everyone's going to operate on chain and everything. And so we have to just accept that. There's been always, and we've complained about this before, there's always been these kind of memes and ways of arguing in favor of Bitcoin or these ideas that they get presented, but it's only applicable right now when there's really not that much, that wide of adoption that you could say, oh, I can, you know, use the, you know, buy a coffee with Bitcoin and it's immutable and I can control all my own keys and control all my money and everything. And that's good. And if you can do that right now, that's very, very good. But, you know, we have to understand how money works. And like you said earlier, it works in layers. And even though, you know, we don't have the technology right now to necessarily make this all work, this is what we've been talking about for a while. As there's more money and interest put into Bitcoin, you're going to have more engineering resources directed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So while Fedimints right now might look a little bit clunky, or you might not know what's going on with it, we don't know what the future is going to bring and the engineering solutions that are out there that can solve a lot of these problems. It would be really, really cool if the layers built on top of Bitcoin, on top of the Lightning Network, if that's what, you know, becomes the, you know, part of the structure of how the Bitcoin monetary system works, it might be a situation where you do have pretty decent sovereignty. You might not be operating directly with UTXOs, but it would be really cool if we have these layers where you control private keys for the portion of the slice of Bitcoin that you have ownership of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that kind of trickles down through the layers to the base layers so that
some way to verify it or whatever,
right?
Know what it is.
Yeah. So we are so early still. And yeah, I think, I mean, what? We're, so 2009 Bitcoin started, and so we're like 15 years in. And people are like nervous about, you know, the scaling and everything. It's like, I think we need to take a chill pill and calm down a little bit and kind of see how things go. I think the best thing you can do is just kind of ignore it. Kind of ignore everything that's going on and just do your thing. Continue to accumulate Bitcoin. And let the chips fall where they may. I was kind of... what was I? I was chatting with Carr today a little bit, and he said something like, about the block space and how we're pretty much at full blocks. And it seems like it's been like that forever, but it really hasn't been that long. And we've all kind of adjusted to it. And it just goes into that idea of the saying of gradually then suddenly, that you can that things just kind of change, and we feel like it's been that way forever, and you just kind of keep doing your thing, just keep operating in a smart, intelligent way, and things work out in your favor. So, you know, if you're accumulating Bitcoin right now and you've got UTXOs, I wouldn't be all that worried about how Fediments are going to play out or whatever. I think it's just going to kind of work its way out. And, you know, you might have some long-term cold storage with your long-term savings. And as Bitcoin adoption occurs, you're going to have more, you're going to start using the Lightning Network more. You're going to start using maybe layers on top of the Lightning Network more. And that'll just be kind of like your day-to-day thing. And you'll still have your savings and long-term storage and UTXOs that, as it appreciates in value, you're going to be able to move that around because you're going to have so much wealth. And everything else will kind of just form around you. And you'll just adapt to it and use the tools that are available to you. And, you know, assuming that you hang on to that Bitcoin and cold storage, you're kind of going to be a major economic player and be able to behave as such. And so when people, assuming that you're still running a node, your own node, to validate all your transactions and everything, when people say, oh, we want to inflate Bitcoin, the Bitcoin supply, or increase the block space so that more people can do blah, 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 you're just going to go, no, that doesn't benefit me. No, screw you. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just kind of went on a long rant that.
Yeah.
Hopefully it made sense, because I didn't really think this stuff out all too well. What do you got, Slappy?
Yeah, I know. I'm not giving you much help here, but I didn't. It's hard to do a podcast when you don't listen to anything anymore, you know? I can't really comment on what they said or what Vijay said. But like you said at the very beginning, this isn't new. This has been talked about for years.
Yeah.
Why is it all just coming up again? Is it new people in? Is it old people who didn't read? Who don't understand? Because, you know, if you look at it on the surface, I get the question, like we go back to 2016, 2017. Should we do big blocks or keep them small blocks? Well, let's think about it. And what are the risks and what are the changes? Like, we need on-chain transactions. We need to scale. This has to scale. This will never scale the way it is. I understand people saying we need bigger blocks at that time, even though they were wrong.
Right.
And then I think, as you already mentioned, Bitcoin Standard kind of put it together and talked about the history of money and what money has always been. And, you know, the problems with Bigger blocks. Is that what they're like? The question, are people going back to bigger blocks to scale?
There seems to be some people, but I think they haven't. I think most Bitcoiners haven't done it yet. But they're just kind of rejecting this idea that.
Lightning doesn't so work, I think, and sediments don't work, and this.
Yeah, I've been kind of seeing that, but a lot of Bitcoiners are in the space because they get frustrated and hate the banking system as it is.
Yeah,
but I think what they don't understand is that the banking system is what it is right now. It's not that banks are bad; it's that the incentive structure that the fiat system creates bad behavior. But if mm-hmm. you've got a system with, you know, Bitcoin with hard money, the incentive structure is totally different. And so banks are going to operate in a completely different way.
Right.
Because the incentive structure isn't out of whack. And so that's what we have to understand. And that's the point that Vijay Boyapati makes, is that he says, like, on the one hand, Bitcoin isn't for everybody. But on the other hand, Bitcoin is for everybody. And people go, oh, he's contradicting himself. It's like, no, stop being an idiot. He's looking at it from two different perspectives and two different things. So, yeah, Bitcoin isn't for everyone in the sense that not everyone's going to control their own UTXOs. But on the other hand, in a different situation, the way you look at it, Bitcoin is for everyone in the sense that a Bitcoin monetary system is going to be good for everyone.
Yes.
It's going to allow for the accumulation of wealth. It's going to allow for, you know, people to save for all the benefits of a hard money system, where, you know, you more stuff in the economy gets accumulated, then prices go down. That's where, you know, Bitcoin's going to be for everybody and it's going to benefit everybody. But I think we're just so used to just repeating memes and little quips and easy sayings and everything, that it's just people have a hard time with understanding more, you know, some of the finer details. And they see right now that they're able to, you know, take control of their private keys and everything. And then someone goes around and says, well, hey, I mean, I think that we're just going to have a bunch of, like, you know, distributed central banking and fediments. And, you know, not everyone's going to control their own UTXOs. And people see that as an attack on themselves because they control their own keys right now.
Right.
I don't know. It's tough to get in people's heads, but it'll be interesting. And like I said, just keep doing what you're doing. Don't, like, you know, don't let all the noise and the garbage and everything change what your strategy is. You know, I think it's smart to accumulate Bitcoin and put it in cold storage with, like, a multi-sig, depending on how much you have. And just kind of letting the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, that's kind of my attitude. I don't know what's going to win. What's going to work. You know, just
look at the last couple of years. You know, when we were getting into this a while ago, especially like when the Lightning Network started, and it just seemed kind of like pie in the sky, that it was kind of difficult. You needed to make sure that you had, you know, channels open to the right places to make a payment go through. But like right now, I can basically send a Lightning payment just from my node to pretty much anywhere, and it routes. That's pretty wild. That's insane. And I don't have that many channels open, and I don't really try to manage it all that well. It just works. That just goes to show that, you know, when this stuff gets built out, that you just kind of let the incentive structures do their things.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I was going to also say about the Lightning Network. Oh, that's right. An episode or two ago, I put out 1,000 Bitcoin. I wish. 1,000 Satoshi bounty for whoever could say the guess the movie reference for the look what you did, you little jerk. And we did have someone claim it. And he sent me a Lightning address for his Strike account. And actually, the our Bitcoin Trickle node went down because I finally figured out what it was. It was just our server ran out of memory. And so I just needed to buy a plan with a little bit more memory to fix that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, download the blocks and everything. But I sent him the payment and it went through and it was fine. And he was using Strike as a source. I don't have any channels open directly to Strike or anything, but it went through.
So, nice.
I think that's pretty cool.
Likewise.
So, all right. I don't know. I don't think I really have anything else.
Sad.
I guess that's it. I want to wish everyone, again, a happy Dingus Day. Hope you're celebrating. Hope you found a lovely lady to throw some water on and strike with some pussy willows. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.